Hello, brains, and welcome back to On the Edge with April Mahoney. The spot, the place where the conversations are pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. I have a panel here of big brain medical researchers, nurse, and doctor. But before we get started today, I have to start with prayer because I am overwhelmed. As I told my guests, I had no idea that from the comfort of my home and a computer screen, that this little old podcast will be an influencer and a messenger to people around the world. I get so many messages how you encourage me and I look up to you and I inspire you. I'm searching them out, brains. I'm searching them out, okay? And I'm a little emotional. I'm trying to get myself together, but I'm exhausted, you know, 3-4 shows a day, podcasts. Who does that? Brains. So I want to start with a prayer. Can we all bow our heads? And this is to all gods, but I got to speak to the one that I know. Okay? I ask you, Lord Father, to be with us and to hold us in your embrace. You have been better to us than we have been to ourselves. We are asking for your mercy. We're asking for your insight. We're asking for protection for our people on the front lines, our medical professionals, our first responders. I'm asking for prayer for our political associates and people that are supposed to be in charge, that they have clarity and understanding and wisdom. I'm asking you to look over the underserved and overlooked. I ask you, God, please, just to be with us, just to love us. Give us one more chance, Okay, because we've learned something in these 40 days of Lent. And I know that you died and you came back and you have risen and you coming back again. Thank you for everything that you have done and continue to do. In Jesus' name, in all God's name, amen.
Amen.
Woo! All right, let's do it. All right, so brains, I'm introducing you to Dr. Carol Banka. She is a researcher. She is the former chair of the Doris Howell Foundation on Women's Health. I'm introducing you to Dr. Liz Lister. She specializes in women's hormone health, and she is a practicing MD. And also, my other special love right there, that is nurse Jackie Hendricks. She is a certified nurse midwife. We're going to be talking about research. We're going to be talking about the impact on what's going on in labor and delivery. And we're going to talk about some of the signs and symptoms and things that we can control, that are within our control here on the edge. I need you to sit up straight and pay attention. This is going to save your lives. So let's start with Dr. Liz Lister. Can you tell us a little bit about your experience?
You mean my background or what's happening?
Yeah, your background experience.
Mm-hmm. All right. I'm a board certified OBGYN. I narrowed down my practice over the years, stopping delivering babies because I preferred to sleep at night. That was the first change. And then it just kept narrowing down to where I now do a full-time consultative practice, specializing in women, but also men in midlife, 40s, 50s, 60s, and better, and helping people balance their hormones and have great energy and also have strong immune systems and feel great at every age. That's what I'm up to at this point.
Well, we need to build that immune system. Yeah. Nurse Jackie Hendricks, tell us a little bit about you and how you show up in the world.
Well, I'm a midwife and working in a practice in San Diego, hospital-based, and just trying to, particularly right now, help families, moms, and staff and friends kind of, you know, get through these difficult times and still have a beautiful birth experience without fear, hopefully, or as little as possible, and still take home that memory in the time of COVID that they had a beautiful birth.
Well, you know, there's going to be some strange baby names coming out of this.
Already.
Dr. Carol Banka. You are a researcher, and you have been a researcher for a long time. Tell us a little bit more about your experience.
Well, my doctorate was in anatomy and cell biology. My postdoctoral work, I delved into reproductive medicine. Ultimately, when I began my own research program and running my own research lab, I looked at the interaction of sex steroids with heart disease. And I ran my laboratory at a small institute where I was director of women's health research. And then more recently was in the Department of Medicine at UCSD, from which I retired a little more than a year ago.
Dr. Lister, you know, I'm confused, okay? Because really, you know, I wake up with a scratchy throat, which I didn't had this scratchy throat for months prior to this. A little post-nasal drip. First thing I do is run through the thermometer. You know, anything strange. I don't even want to go out if I have that because I'm afraid that it's going to attach to something. Give us some of the signs and symptoms that differ from a regular cold that people are experiencing with the coronavirus.
Yeah. People are experiencing a different sequence, a different order. So usually a regular cold for most people starts with some congestion, stuffiness, then it goes to a sore throat, then it might have other symptoms like headache and muscle pain, and then maybe fever, okay? Whereas with COVID-19, the order can be just all cattywampus, where people can suddenly have sore throats, suddenly have difficulty breathing, and so it can move really quickly. And this is a problem, the virus itself can actually move, okay? So the virus tends to start in the upper nasal and oral cavities. However, then it can completely move down and not be in this upper area anymore where people are running the nasal swab test. So that's one of the many, many confusing factors of this virus.
Right, because it's a moving target, okay? Mm-hmm. I'm gonna ask Dr. Banka and Dr. Lister to kind of banter back and forth with this. What is this test like? Okay, because people have no idea. I hear that it's pretty painful to get it done because they take some sort of swab and they stick it up your nose. I don't know. Some people think it's a swab in their mouth. Some people think it's a blood test. They have no idea. What does this test look like that they have thus far?
There are two tests, April, but primarily the one being used is the nasal swab, which is a PCR test for the RNA of the virus. This is an RNA virus. There is also now a serological test. I know it's being used in LA County. The serological test is a blood test that looks for antibodies to the virus. The problem with that test is that it takes 7 to 11 days after you're infected to mount a significant enough antibody response to have it show up as a positive. So you can have false negatives with the serological test because you simply haven't mounted an antibody response yet. You can generally, you only have false negatives with the PCR test, with the nasal swab test, if the sample has been mishandled. Now there is the possibility, as Dr. Lister pointed out, that once the virus moves into your lungs, it may not be present in your nasal cavity. However, PCR is such a sensitive test that most likely it will be picked up. So the false negatives would be primarily because of poor handling of the tests. We don't know if there are false positives, but there are unlikely to be very many false positives with the PCR test.
Could it cross-react with other viruses? Could that give a false positive?
Yes. In fact, researchers both at Scripps and at Vanderbilt have found that antibodies they had developed to the SARS virus, each has found at least one antibody that is cross-reacting with the COVID-19 virus. So that would be a possibility.
And I had another question for you, Dr. Banka. With the 7 to 11 days, that's to mount any antibody response, right? Like that's just to get started. Is that to the IgM or how is that? Does it take the IgM that long to appear? Because I read 3 to 4 weeks for the IgG to appear. So
That must be IgM or IgA that's coming up in the 7 to 11 days.
Okay. If it's too soon.
Yeah.
Right. So, Nurse Jackie, are they testing, mothers that as they're coming into labor and delivery? What does that look like? We're not hearing a lot about that.
Across the country, there's extremely different ways this is being approached. So I have many friends across the country, so I'm hearing about that, and we hear it in the media. Currently where I'm at, we are doing testing for induction labor and planned surgeries like a cesarean birth so that we would have those results prior to them coming to the hospital. And then we are also swabbing moms who come in just in labor or return labor, whatever. However, right now that test is still taking some hours, and we're really looking forward to a more rapid test. And I'm hearing that a 30-minute test is very close to being available to us.
Yes.
Well, and again, we have no idea how this is going to impact the fetus. We don't know if, if a mother contracts the COVID-19, how is that going to be transmitted to the baby? So I want to go back to Dr.
I'm reading that it's not. I want to hear more from Jackie, but.
Okay. My understanding is a vertical transmission or from the mother to the baby has been very limited. And there's only a couple of cases far that we're aware of. And I'm not even, the big ones make the news, but I also don't know on those babies what the condition of their mother was or themselves. But it seems very limited that there's that transmission for the mother to the baby. So at this point, that's one of the good things that we have going for us.
Wow. Now you talked about a 30-minute test. I just heard on the news today that there is a 5-minute test, Dr. Banka, that they are conducting and, finding favorable here in San Diego County. I know that you know the best and the brightest, that you've worked with them in research. Absolutely. I've been in some meetings with you, super brains. Tell us what they're doing with regards to trying to find out what this antibody is and what this 5-minute test looks like.
I actually am not aware of the 5-minute test. That might be the Abbott test. I don't know for sure. I know that the county tried to secure the test that Abbott Labs had developed and was unable to, but now Kaiser and I believe Scripps Health are both using the Abbott test. So I'm guessing that might be the 5-minute test. What I can tell you is that Hologic here in San Diego has developed a very rapid test. This is a company that has focused on viral testing, and the minute that the Japanese made the sequence of the virus available, they jumped on this. They are in a position, they've been given an emergency approval by the FDA. They are in a position to start shipping 600,000 tests. Their test is a fast throughput, so that would probably be a 5 to 15 to 30 minute test. The only limitation is you have to have their equipment to run these tests. And apparently their equipment is available in many labs in the United States. So that when those 600,000 tests start shipping, I think they're already shipping about 20,000 a week. That's going to ramp up our ability to test. And that's going to be a pretty rapid test. One of the problems is we have thousands of tests that have been taken that are sitting waiting to be run because apparently there are labs in this country that have these PCR machines but don't have them up and running. And so it still can take days to weeks in some cases.
Wow.
And that would be an antibody test. If it's going to be quick like that, it's going to be the antibody screening, I believe. Oh, no, I guess it could be the PCR too, huh?
It's more likely to be an antibody test.
Yeah, okay.
The only place I know that that's being used right now is in LA County. But that was yesterday's news, so it's in San Diego.
Dr. Lister, break down the terminology, okay, because all brains don't understand what an antibody is. What is an antibody?
Absolutely. So the very first thing that happens in your body, you get the virus. If the virus comes into your body, it number one factor is how much of it comes into your body. Did you just touch a little bit of something, or did somebody sneeze on you like you're a healthcare worker on the front lines? That's the first. So you got this increase in viral load, and then and that's where that test can check things out. And then hopefully your immune system handles it and you decrease the viral load, and then your body makes antibodies, which is how we fight infection. Initially, there's one called IgM. That's the first one that appears. And then there's IgG. So over time, I'm going to try and do this with both my hands. The IgG goes up and, IgM first, then IgG later. Eventually, IgM goes back down, no longer an acute infection. And then you have antibodies and hopefully immunity. So when you get a vaccine, then it's causing your body to develop those IgG antibodies so that you can remain immune and fighting off whatever that infection might be.
Wow. All right. I want to continue. I'm sorry.
Can I comment on that? I just wanted to say again that test is only effective when you're well into your disease, because of the length of time it takes to raise antibodies. So even though it's a 5-minute test, it's only effective if you're a week to 10 days into. What that test will really be effective for is finding out how many people have had the disease that we don't know about and have recovered. And that's going to give us a real good snapshot of what the true disease numbers look like.
Damn, I told you I got some brains on my show.
Exactly. Okay. That's going to help us get back to what we want to go back to from our previous lives as we knew it.
Well, it's never going back. Okay, this is a message here. This is a perfect pause. But let me ask another question. Okay, I want to ask a question. Any one of the three of you can chime in on this. My concern is, okay, we find the antibody, we find the people that have been tested. There's no rapid testing. They want to return the world back to normal by Saturday, Sunday, the end of the month. What I'm concerned about and I'm really scared about is, yes, I've been quarantined and I love the comfort of my home and it's no problem, but a reinsurgence. Just because we've quarantined ourselves, okay, we have not found the underdiscovered people that are out there that have not been tested. And we go back into the workplace and we have this nightmare all over again, but on steroids. Anybody want to chime in on that? Nurse Jackie?
I think the other two ladies probably have a better knowledge base for good comments than I do on that.
Okay.
What I would say, April, is that the really good news that I've heard lately is that flu numbers are way down. This is just in San Diego County. I don't know about the national numbers, but the flu numbers being down dramatically from what we would expect at this time of year tells us that sheltering in place is working. And I agree with you that if we stop that quarantine too early, we will have a rebound effect that will be a desperate situation for our healthcare institutions.
Yeah.
Right. Dr. Lister, let me ask you a question that pertains to me mostly, because I'm the only piece of pepper here in the salt shaker. Okay. Yes, I'm keeping it light, brains. All right. But Black folks and Brown folks are at a disproportionate. And there's many reasons, okay? We are more likely to have heart disease, diabetes, you know, but there's still dialysis patients, there's cancer patients out there. You know, are they trying to wipe out the Black folks? Well, I don't understand why when things like this happen. And another thing that concerns me is they want to try a vaccine, but they want to try the vaccine in Africa on Black folks. What is it? Are we the chosen people?
Okay, I think you asked about five questions in the comments. Clearly, this crisis is revealing it's uncovering the lack of a system that we doctors already knew about in the United States. That's number one. Number two, it's uncovering the inequities in what we do have. Okay, the fact is there are some tests that people are going to be able to pay for, and then people who can do that, who have the money to be able to do that, are going to be able to do that, and they're going to get tested sooner. You know, this is a problem in the jails, in the prisons. Okay, they're obviously vastly disproportionately representing, I don't even like to say minorities, because, I mean, in my town, white people are the minority. Asian and Indian are 51% of my children's schools. So, you know, it's just different in different parts of the world. But
what I'm seeing also, too, is they're ready to release folks. Yeah, they're ready to release people into the population. You know that they have not been tested properly, that, you know, they're being released on furlough with nowhere to go.
Yeah.
But they want to get them out of the jails.
It's that. And the vulnerable are going to suffer disproportionately. That's absolutely the case. And that's honestly what keeps me up at night.
Yes, Jackie, I want to talk to you a little bit about midwives and how they can support mothers out in the community, because doulas and midwives are huge. And there's a lot of them that are not, quote unquote, in the healthcare system. Women may feel more comfortable having their birthing at their home, underwater, whatever. What could you say to that group and that population that are working outside of the traditional medical hospitals?
Well, it's certainly been a huge problem, a reaction, that healthy mothers do not want to come to a hospital that is full of COVID in their mind and risk themselves and their families. Also, there's many factors around that, such as not being allowed to have a support person or your partner with you, or limiting that to mostly, right now, I believe it's just pretty much everywhere, one person. And that's not the vision that they've had of their birth. And so that is very upsetting to women who have planned birth for maybe 6-8. Now they're 9 months ready to have a baby. So they're looking at out of hospital options, which are perfectly fine for the low risk moms who meet the criteria for birth centers or home birth. Wow. However, I'm a nurse midwife, which I could be working in a home birth practice or a birth center practice, but I work in a hospital system. The women who want those, the women who provide that service as home birth and birth center birth, are swamped, and they are not really able to adequately take care of women who show up with maybe one visit or none and ready to have a baby, because that's not really the way we do prenatal care. No matter where your baby's born, we must have a really good picture of your entire health and your entire pregnancy before we just have someone come to your home or have you come to a birth center and assume it's going to be fine. So women don't really have the choice for that, because it's kind of full out there at this point due to the COVID. So in the hospital, you know, for us, it's just really a lot of reassurance and a lot of care. Like I have all my protective gear on, and, you know, some places have been told they're frightening patients. I like to explain it that I'm protecting them, that I would not want to expose anything that I may have to them. And, you know, now we're also offering patients choices of like wearing masks or whatever they're doing and limiting exposure from the healthcare system. Mm-hmm. But certainly there is a lot of fear, and I would say rightly so, that, you know, they're going to be protected when they come to a hospital.
Well, I'm having a hot flash right now. And all of you ladies work in women's hormone health. And during a disaster, the first thing that happens is our hormones go through the roof. Some women have, you know, spontaneous periods, cramping, hot flashes, depression. Dr. Lister, you are a specialist, as well as Dr. Banka, in hormone health. Talk to us a little bit about that and how we can kind of steady ourselves if we're at home and we're going through this.
I'll talk about cortisol. I'll talk about the stress hormone and how we have to do everything possible to manage that, because cortisol can mess everything up. Cortisol can disrupt sleep. It can cause sweating and hot flashes, where all the other hormones might actually be okay. But then the adrenals are responding to stress, which includes mental stress, by the release of cortisol, which also can then turn around and cause weight gain, right? Plus, a lot of people are less active, sheltering in place. So it's very important to add to your daily routine something that you've been meaning to add, whether it's classes online on Zoom or meditation or protecting your sleep as usual. I know it's hard for me to draw boundaries around my work because I'm doing a lot of work from home, a lot of patient visits on the phone. And so it's hard to draw those boundaries, but it's very, very important.
What would you like to add, Dr. Banka?
I like the last part of what Dr. Lister said, and that is that I think many of us have exercise routines that have been completely disrupted. And actually, YouTube has a lot of really great videos. So I've been doing a lot of exercising in my very own living room. And I think definitely a stress reducer for me during these times.
And turn off the TV, brains, okay?
Oh, yeah.
Constant barrage of pundits and information is a part of mental deterioration. I want to also speak to people that are experiencing addiction, okay? Mm-hmm. Drugs and alcohol, you know, it's not good. Domestic violence, folks are in tight quarters. Keep your hands to yourself, okay? Find a corner. Don't be rude to your kids. Love on your kids. Right, Nurse Jackie? You're giving birth to these children. Love on them. What would you say to parents right now, Nurse Jackie?
It's actually really challenging for all those situations. In my practice, we care for mothers who are in prison. And also speaking to the addiction, because we care for a lot of mothers with addiction. And this is so hard for different reasons for those two populations, but for them to maintain that commitment to not using their substance and not going back, because so many people are sober because of their meeting groups. And that is a powerful support system that is now gone. And there are meetings, I've talked to several people on Zoom or whatever, but it's just, you know, not the same, as we all know. So I really, if you have any clients or people you know that are, you know, in recovery, I certainly would reach out in any way possible to help support them staying sober during this very, very hard time. And some of the choices, like you were mentioning, with exercise and, you know, staying off the anxiety producing TVs, and maybe quarantining within the quarantine so you're in your own room from your family if you feel like it's too much. But there's definitely a lot of stress among the population who is trying to stay in a good recovery.
And tune into The Edge, okay? Because I VJ and I play the best music, 70s, 80s, all kind. Listen to some classical music. It'll stimulate your brain in a different type of frequency. Listen to some jazz, okay? Teach your children about what real music was at that time. Cook a great meal, some holistic food, some vegan recipes. Get dressed up like Dr. Banka's daughter is doing every day. Paint your face in a different way like my daughter is doing every day. Give us some uplifting and encouragement, Dr. Lister. How can we, you know, how can we carry on with a smile?
You know, I have a mantra, which is stay safe, stay home, and stay sane.
All right.
And just repeating whatever you need to do as an individual, whatever, you know, try to get a little bit of time by yourself. I'm in my house with my husband and my young adult sons. And one of my boys is great. He goes and sits in his car and just sits in his car, plays his own music. I mean, he can do that in his room also, but it's just his way of being outside the house.
Right.
Okay, so we all have to develop whatever we can do. You know, they're getting used to watching me do my online Zumba classes on top with my laptop on the piano. So, you know, whatever people need to do, trust, just find a couple of trusted information sources. Right. And only look at those. I do not have regular TV on. I definitely don't watch regular TV news. The news on TV is old news.
Okay? And it's created for sensationalism too.
Yes. It's bad news makes better news than good news. And that's what they're up to with the news. So just get a couple of trusted online sources that you limit how often you look at. You know you're going to get up-to-date, correct information. And other than that, stay positive.
Exactly. And another thing, please check in on the shut-in, okay? I have a father in Los Angeles that is 83 years old, and I drive up there just to take him groceries. I would hate for him to get in the grocery store, be subjected to someone that has it, or they not have what he needs. So check on the shut-in. If it's a neighbor, you know, whatever, you can leave them some food outside. They may need their medication. You know, you never know what you can do, but be a some sort of support to people. Be a part. I love to say, don't be a problem describer, but be a solution seeker. All right. Dr. Carol Baker, give us some words of encouragement, baby.
Okay. There are 5 vaccines in clinical trials. As far as I know, none in Africa, 2 in China, 3 in the United States, actually 1 here in San Diego. Company called Inovio. And so I think that these are all phase one trials. Phase one is designed just to test the safety of a product. So it's still going to be a while till that comes online, but there are treatments. There are over 100 experimental and existing drugs being screened right now. 2 of those are in phase one trials, which is the hydroquinone and remdesivir. It's an antiviral. And those 2 are looking like they might really have promise. The other thing is that this virus appears not to mutate as quickly as, for instance, the flu virus, which means that if we do find a vaccine, it could be effective for quite a long time. And I would point out that Jonas Salk was at the University of Pittsburgh when he developed the polio vaccine. The University of Pittsburgh has just developed, this is my hometown, so I brag a bit.
Shout out.
They have just developed this patch that has 400 tiny needles with one of the spike proteins from the virus. And you wear that patch for a week and you can't feel the needles at all, but you will be vaccinated. To my knowledge, that has not yet been approved for phase one trial, but I suspect it will be. So I think there's hope out there for treatment, there's hope out there for a vaccine, and there's good news in that the virus doesn't seem to mutate very quickly. And also the fact, as I mentioned before, that the flu numbers show us that sheltering in place really does work.
And now, Nurse Jackie, swaddle us, baby. Tuck us in and make us feel comfortable with love and support from a nurse, because nurses are the best. I love you, doctors, but nurses are the best.
Well, I do have to give a shout out to the doctors I work with, who are amazing and wonderful colleagues, and it's great to have the ability to have true medical care and surgery available if needed, but also support as healthy women just want to birth their babies with very few interventions. So my story is, every day through all this, when we're in the room and a baby's being born, nothing else is on your mind, not the COVID, nothing. And when a baby's coming out, and you know, even this week we had amazing, beautiful births with such emotion and joy, and that time is not polluted by anything outside. It's just that focus of the moment for the whole family, for all of us. And we're, as healthcare providers, we're so, so truly lucky and privileged to be part of that sacred transition for that baby into that family. So I have joy every single day that I'm not working, but, you know, being able to participate in my passion of caring for women and their families. And so that is every single day. Joyful things are happening every day.
Wow. Woo, I'm full of brains. I want to ask one more question before we conclude. Dr. Lister, please explain to us what a ventilator is and what is ventilating, because it's pretty intense. Unfortunately, my brother passed away of lung cancer, and I saw it in action. It's a cold piece. And what that means and the duration, you know, again, I keep hearing that the longer that you're on a ventilator, the less likely you are to recover. Tell us a little bit about that.
All right. Well, basically, we're talking about a few different pieces, and it's the machine which will be either helping you breathe or breathing for you, depending on how sick you are. So there's the piece that goes in your mouth. There's a tube that attaches to it, then to a machine. And there's a lot of, so there's mixing oxygen into the air. There are various pieces that are the breath, which we know is contains the moisture, which can contain the virus. So there, that's why people are talking about the various pieces to the machine and how to keep things sterile. That's why it's such a challenge. And there's also, you know, it's not natural, obviously. It's a mechanical substitute for the natural process. And that, so for example, if there has to be a tube way down into the lungs, the body doesn't like having a tube there. So that can cause its own issues, okay? And so that's why they say the longer you're on it, that's, I think that just is referring to the fact that the person is much sicker. Okay, the longer they're needing support with that. So, you know, we never know what the human body can do. Okay, so a ventilator is there to support the whole process, keep oxygen going. That's how we get oxygen, is through the lungs, and this virus likes to attack the lungs. So the ventilator is absolutely a key piece of intensive care equipment for people who are at that level of respiratory distress. Right, and that's why when we flatten the curve, we lower the number of people at any given time who are going to need a significant intervention like that, and make sure that we have the resources to be able to help people survive and recover.
Yeah, wow. Two things. You know, I noticed when I was out, I had on a mask. This one.
Yeah. Okay.
This one here.
A mask here, yeah.
I doubled up. I put it on this.
Okay.
But the moisture on my face, I started to sweat. And so, again, we have to keep them clean, brains. Don't just have one. You got to wash these suckers, okay? Right. Change these out and keep moist. You know, keep the moisture down, because moisture builds up bacteria. I want to close with you, Dr. Banka, and I want to talk a little bit about you know, once there is detection and there is a vaccine, how does that work in the body? I mean, does everyone kind of have to be vaccinated? Like, you know, kids don't get the vaccination that I have on my arm. But what does that look like?
Well, the goal is to have herd immunity. If you can get 80% of the population in a state where they have an immune response to the virus, then you're in pretty good shape. So, of course, vaccines are controversial, but the goal would be that one of the things we don't know yet is whether you are immune to the disease once you've had it and recovered. We know you have a lot of antibodies, and in fact, there are hospitals now that are taking antibodies from the blood of patients that have recovered and actually transferring, it's called passive immunity, transferring those antibodies to people who are very sick. So,
is that also what they're doing with regards to plasma? Because they're asking for plasma from individuals that have recovered from
that's why. Okay. Yes, that's why they're asking for that.
Pay attention to these doctors here. You know, I can ask the questions.
So again, the goal is to establish herd immunity such that this is no longer a pandemic. Mm-hmm. It will then presumably be like the flu every year. Unfortunately, it is a more deadly virus. So it's in some ways more important that you have that herd immunity in place. The fact that the virus doesn't mutate very quickly suggests that if we develop immunity, either by having had the disease or by being vaccinated, we may be protected for a long time. And that's the hope.
So that's things like the bubonic plague or tuberculosis, those type of things in the past. Yeah.
The plague lasted for 300 years. We're way ahead of that now because of our technology. Wow. So we're hoping that, you know, within months, we will be approaching a level of immunity. But of course, until a vaccine comes on board, we probably won't reach herd immunity.
Wow. Well, thank you. Do any of you have any questions of, you know, the other ladies on the panel before we conclude?
I'd just like to express some gratitude, April, to you for keeping everybody posted and wondering this wonderful podcast, and to Jackie and Liz for being out there on the front line taking care of people. You and the people in our grocery stores are not to compare you directly, but these are some of the heroes, I think.
The post office.
Yeah.
Post office is still there.
Yeah. And I think if we can all think about that and be grateful for those who are helping us through this, it'll help.
And one more person I want to thank. The people that are involved in social media. So many people are taking advantage of this. You don't realize that if we did not have social media, we would not be able to connect. Could you imagine being isolated and not having that? So give a shout out, you know, whether you like the owners of these companies, Google, YouTube, Facebook.
Zoom.
Zoom, absolutely. I went to buy some Zoom stock. Girl, that's out my price range now. But, you know, I thank them. Okay, really thank them, because if it wasn't for them, we would not be able to communicate. Your thoughts, Nurse Jackie?
Overall, I'd have to say it was great to meet both of you ladies and get some more wisdom from you. And it feels that connection, like you said, feels good. Like, you know, that there's a group of people working in multiple aspects of this problem. And we have our own focus, but together, I think that we're going to be able to come out of this stronger as, you know, a healthcare system, hopefully. A lot, great chaos brings great change. So I think we can get through the chaos and have some really good things that change in the healthcare system. So I'm really looking forward to that opportunity to get those things done for everybody in this country and even the world.
Thank you, Nurse Jackie. And your closing remarks, Dr. Lister?
I'm also grateful to you for bringing us together, and also to Carol and Jackie. I could definitely ask many, many more questions. You might have to do another session for us, April.
Okay, we don't have nothing but time. We all in the house looking cute.
I know, right? So for Jackie, I mean, absolutely. When I was in medical school, I realized that I was learning the most important aspect of what I do from the nurses. And then I became an OB that was in Southern California that was willing to work with the midwives, which made me unusual, which made me mad. That shouldn't be unusual. It should be standard.
Fortunately, it is between the Kaiser system and San Diego, the UC Birth Center practice. Scripps has midwives. I think there is more of an understanding that we all have our master's degree and, you know, we're working just like a nurse practitioner, but in the OB field, so a little more expanded than that. And the collegiality is certainly there as we work with interns and residents. We've developed that opportunity to understand where we each come from and that we have basically the same goals of caring for women safely and with expertise.
Yeah.
Well, you guys are just, I love you from the bottom of my socks because my heart just isn't deep enough.
Love you too, April.
Okay. We're going to hang in there. We're going to keep it on and popping, and we are going to fight the good fight right here. I done lost my postcard. Good Lord. Right here on the edge. Okay. We all just hanging on the edge. But I'm so glad that I'm hanging with you guys. I'm so glad. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Does anybody want to leave their contact information? I know Dr. Lister, you have a book. I know Dr. Banka, you're working on a book. And, you know, Nurse Jackie, do you guys want to leave any contact information for my brains in case they have additional questions or they want to reach out to you? Dr. Lister?
Yeah, absolutely. For me, the best way to connect with me is my website, which is drlizmd.com, drlizmd.com. And you can write to me, you can read things I've written, but connect with me. I have a newsletter, a video class that you just get for free for signing up.
And we featured your book. I see your book on your desk. Bring that book forward so we can see what's going on in the pages of your book.
Yeah, I usually have them closer. I'll bring them closer.
Yes, bring them closer.
This is really about perimenopause, Dr. Liz's Easy Guide to Menopause. And this is the book that came out last year, Go for Great, Feel Great at Every Age. All right, so that's what I wish for people. And having a really good, healthy immune system is all part of that. So we have to stay home and stay safe.
Okay, Dr. Banka, you have some contact information? Someone leave you some emails or something?
I can be reached by at Carol, carole.banka@gmail.com.
All right. And Nurse Jackie, any questions? You want to leave an email?
Same thing. I could go by my name, J-A-C-Q-U-I, Henrich, @gmail.com.
All right, brains.
Let me down.
All right.
Thank you. Nice to meet you all.
All right. I love you.
Love you too.
Thank you all.
Hang on just a second, and I'll cut this at the end.